Thank you, Dag. Yes, I'm concerned. I'm from the Arctic. I'm really concerned. We see the sort of the pollution that's coming up from what happened 30, 40 years ago down in Europe. And I treat the privacy issues, so that is a sort of the fallout of what is being captured or data out there, is very similar to what is happening with pollution. We really pollution our environment with all this type of privacy violations, all this privacy data, is my claim. So yes, I'm a privacy advocate as a starting point. First of all, I'd like to tell that privacy is already at risk. And I'm only looking into the data retention perspective as one out of many, or in a series of a sort of potential mechanisms for capturing data that is a sort of, in the bigger picture, is taking away the last piece of the privacy that we tend to think that we have. Because the technology out there is really scary. Because we have really no idea how much of our personal life already is available to government, to illegal activities, or last but not least, to commercial activities. You said I was involved in file search and transfers. Yes, we have approximately 4,000 customers. I've been chief scientist in the company for 8 years, and we know really technology, what you can do with this type of data. So I'm very concerned about what you really can do. We're building the guns, and I'm telling, be careful with what you can do, use the guns for. But I'm talking as a professor, not as an employee of this company, though, just to have said that. So the outline of my talk is, why is in general personal data interesting? There is a need for it. What type of personal data is captured? Then a little bit about the technology, or the lack of technology to a sort of support this data retention directive. Technical, why is personal data interesting? It is the positive side of the sword is you actually can use it for something good, for the benefit of customers, for the benefit of those making these services available, for instance, search engines. The point is that you can do what we call upstream evaluation by having some sort of knowledge about the individual user. You know that you can parse data next to the server. You don't have to send, for instance, a whole Google database over the wire to a person. That is more than 10 billion documents typically in the database. You can actually, by knowing what the person is looking for, you have the ability to stream or to parse the data close to where they are. So typically you have RSS feeds, many different publish subscribe systems really emerging these days, where knowing the user, what it is. It's a Bush. What is it? Is it George Bush I'm looking for? Is it, if I'm a biologist, is it a special pine bush up in the Arctic? So it's really a difference. Recommendation systems, we know that it's good if you know a little bit about the person behind that IP address. What has he bought or she bought previously when you come up with a recommendation? This is, by the way, my favorite book or my favorite author. You don't see that. It's Jared Diamond, a fantastic professor from UCLA. It's highly recommended reading for all of you. It's not about computer science, but it's about evolution. It's about everything, so highly recommended, since we're talking about recommendation systems. Search engines. Well, we basically use it for getting higher precisions in the queries. You can do a test. Both two of you can query Yahoo or Google or whatever search engine you prefer, and you will see that the results that are coming back might differ slightly. They shouldn't. There should be some deterministic output from a computer program, but often it is not. And again, because the result that is coming back to you is filtered through some previous history, some of the personal traces you left out in the cyberspace when you visited. And I see cyberspace not only on search engines. I say when you're, what's happening today is a few big players are actually correlating data. And that's the scary thing. They correlate data from using your Gmail account with your search history, what you buy somewhere, and all that. That's happening today. So, for instance, here, but to talk about more the positive side of the technology side of it, if you can do some sort of query analysis on and result analysis, where what is the user role, what is the location, for instance, if you query restaurants, well, normally maybe I would get it up in Tromsø or in New York. But in this case, I would actually get a result set back for Bergen, of course, because I'm in Bergen. I don't care about restaurants in Tromsø currently. The device, that has to do with can I get a cure or a result set of 10 lines, or should it be 2 lines or 40 lines, and so on. If I'm using a cellular phone, I just want one result maybe back. So precision is very important, and knowing the customer, the history might be beneficial, is beneficial. A second one is, of course, the economic incentive. Some of the biggest players in the IT industry is, of course, companies like Google, Microsoft, who bought the company where I've been involved in very recently. Yahoo, all these very, 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 very big players are coming up with a new business model where you actually have online advertisement as the key element. That means, Google, is it a search engine? No, it's not a search engine company, at least. They are an advertisement company, if you ask me. Yes, they provide something for free, but they earn their money based on all the advertisements. So it's an advertisement company. And if you look into the estimate of the IDC, a research company in the US did recently, the digital economy is in the order of $30 billion. And half of that is actually through search engines, meaning advertisements that is being put into the search engine. So whenever I've searched for a fly fishing, I get, for instance, the Orbis marketing ad to the right instead of getting some other obscure general stuff about something, deodorant or whatever, that is supposed to be pushed to me. So this precision is extremely important, and knowing who you are, what you've done, knowing who you really want to be, that is more or less what is lurking behind the scene. And this is, we're talking about data much bigger than maybe what you can imagine that the data retention mechanisms will actually capture and store. For instance, to look into what ComScore recently did on behalf of New York Times, and this was released very recently, they looked into the five of the big players in the US, and they accounted in the order of 336 billion transmissions, meaning zip codes, queries, all that just shipped back to the servers of these five companies. That's quite some. Second, we have illegal activities. Of course, you can imagine this type of data is important for spam companies. I consider scam to be an illegal activity. And if you know about that, well, currently it's like a shotgun. You're spreading, using number 8, you're spreading very thin, and hopefully you manage to get a few of those small shells, or whatever you call them, into the thing you're shooting at. Same with spam. Shoot wide. Can you imagine spam with a much more better precision? Actually, some of the spam might be interesting then for some of us, and the revenue will increase for those doing the spam. Still illegal, but security fraud, identity theft, come on. What is important today? Well, you trust the so-called persona number or the social security number. You trust a little bit more information, and suddenly you can open up a bank account. You can open up a cellular account. So actually, I have a cellular in the name of Dag Elgesen. And of course, he is traced down for some illegal activity through the data retention mechanism and so on. But this is everybody. A teenage can do this kind of stuff. Then we have, of course, the old classic activity, which we already have covered today, which has to do with surveillance, government surveillance, which is a good thing. We need somebody looking after what's cooking out there. There are bad guys out there, of course. So yes, I'm positive to some mechanisms for the police and for the enforcement of this type of crime. But there's also a limit here. Today we know that it's not only that they can look into what's, some aspects of if they have a legal, well, no, I'm covering your areas. I'm not at all a legal person. But the point is that you can really tap into much more than just telephone conversations. You have cameras. Just in the UK alone, I've heard figures in the order of 400,000 cameras in the UK alone, which are digital cameras put out there. You have, in particular in the US now, you have a project called Project Hostile Intent by the US Department of Homeland Security, where they want to aid the, for instance, the border crossing entry points, the officers with toolkits so they can determine based on the gesture, the face, what is happening, all these small micro expressions to sort of determine that something is odd with that person. Currently, they are looking into items that goes through. The next step is to look into a person where the item is not the important thing. So there's a lot of activities going on there. And in that perspective, the EU data retention is just a small puzzle. But it's, for me, it's a principal one. It's an important one. But don't lose track. I'm scared as well as all of the other ones out there. In fact, I'm much more scared about the first one that is happening with the commercial and the illegal activities going on. And we don't care. Actually, come on, our teenagers, they sign away their, a lot of their privacy by just getting a shampoo or something in the snail mail. Oh yes, look, daddy, here is my profile, I give it away. And I'm getting this free magazine back. Isn't this cool? And this is what's happening. So what type then of personal data is being captured and stored out there? IDC, again, this well-known research company in the US did a study recently, and they came up with an estimate that every user on average on the internet, I don't go good for that figures, it can be 60, it can be 20, but in the order of 45 gig per person is sort of being stored. Okay, and only half of this is user generated, my images, my local files, whatever. But what about the rest? Well, that is being captured by somebody else. Again, IDC, and this is a well-known company. So they call what this concept the digital shadow. All the traces you leave out there, all the surveillance cameras, and they don't go away. They don't go away because there is no way of garbage collecting all this massive amount of data. Yes, after a while, maybe you overwrite the tape or whatever you use at a gas station, but come on, it's really being stored because memory is more or less for free. It's an explosion in growth of this type of data. So, do we want our web surfing history to lay out there, to be out there? I don't want it, but still, I'm using search engines. So it's an anarchy. It's an anarchy meaning that you have no control. Yes, you have good intents. In, for instance, Germany has a very nice law and when it comes to protecting this type of data, even just after a session, you have to erase the private data that was captured to help you in a better position between a customer or a user of an internet service and the service itself. But in general, in Europe, we have good intentions through regulations, but come on, you know regulations doesn't work. It's like having speeding up at the Finnmarksvidda. You can only speed in 80 kilometers, but who cares if there is a middle of the night in the midnight sun in June? You speed at 100, maybe, even more, and whatever. So it's an anarchy. And I look at Google, for instance. They're doing the job. How many of you are using Google? How many of you are concerned about privacy issues? Yes, you are. How many have looked into the / privacy at the Google site? Some of you? And this is text from it. I showed my wife, who is a medical doctor, she stopped using Gmail immediately. What they are saying here is basically that, oh yeah, we're profiling you guys, and we may share aggregated non-personal information. How do you define non-personal? In the debate, in a dialogue now, or dialogue, a dispute between EU and Google, these days, they are actually claiming that, well, IP address is non-personal, so we can share your IP address and all the searches and everything that we have captured about you. And going back to the IDC study, I think Google was capturing in the order of 600 so-called transactions per month per user. And they can share that. That's privacy issues. You lawyers have to figure out what. But again, it's this dispute, and what is then non-personal? But this has been given away by all of us. Same with MySpace. Oh yeah, this can be shared with third parties. So that means other commercial actors, that means actually you can correlate data and build up a huge, huge, huge trajectory of your life throughout history. I want my privacy. I've lost my privacy. It can't be that harmful. Oh, come on, this guy from the Arctic, he can't be serious. What did AOL do? Well, AOL did a good job 1.5 years ago by serving the academic community, and they put out one of their logs with 20 million web search queries. They made it very anonymous in the sense that they just put out a number. So instead of having my IP, they put out a number. So New York Times, they thought, okay, this is good. So let's just track one of those. They picked 44, 17, 7, 49. This was a user, and then they looked into and saw what was the query that particular user queried. Well, numb fingers. Is that private? Dog that urinates on everything? Maybe that person has a dog or a dog problem. Landscape in Lilburn, Georgia. Oh, now we're getting, now we're zooming in. Just one random picked out of the big log. Or one of the search engines that was anonymized in addition. Oh, in Georgia, in Lake Gwinnett, 60 single men. This is getting cool. And in particular, when you looked into all the different Arnolds here, oh, there must be somebody with the last name Arnold living in that area, and there can't be too many. And of course, they knocked on the door of Thelma Arnold, a widow living in Lilburn, Georgia, and that's a picture that was shown in the article in the New York Times. Oh, yes, my God, she said. It's my whole personal life. Those curies are mine. They chased her down. That was just simple. So is it privacy? I think this is a privacy violation. Just a simple example of some legal company in the US doing the job properly. And this is what we see at the top of the iceberg. By the way, it's a personal data paradox. EU, what is cooking now is that they're investigating Google in particular for storing and using personal data. What are they now doing? They are actually mandating that all commercial actors in this domain are supposed to do exactly what they are going after Google and the big players for. Isn't that a paradox? You are the lawyers, you have to settle this. I'm just a technology guy. Going back to then technology, I'm not impressed. I'm not impressed when I see the intent. In particular, Norwegian politicians think that, oh yeah, we can use this to stop terrorists, to fight terrorists. Come on. Is that doable? By tapping into some very, very massive amount of metadata, then to sort of avoid something happening. At least when you listening to some of those advocates for this here in Norway. My claim is that is not impossible. That is impossible. Anyway, before I go into that, I just want to say that technical, the difference is, and that has already been covered earlier today, is yes, it's an international collaboration. It's easier in default access. So it's much easier to tap into this one. And also you get some sort of uniform storage of this data ranging from 6 to 24 months. But I'm looking more into the last issue, improved technology. And I think I disagree with you, Lee, where you said earlier today that, well, as a side effect, they might look or they will look back. I think the big thing will be to automate these tasks. They will be put big business intelligence applications. Like you have Sarbanes-Oxley or Eurosox technology being implemented these days, all private companies have to comply with this standard. Well, again, this is your area. But companies are implementing this as a side effect of the Enron scandal in the US. Don't come and tell me that the federal bureaus or the police or the authorities won't put some automating application on top of this doing automated mining. Otherwise, it's useless. It's just yet another a sort of history record where you go back and can see who did this Tosca guy call up and so on and so on. I don't think that is the thing, and that's the scary part of it. So my conjecture then is that what we see emerging out of this discussion, a so-called technology where they just store some historic data. Once it's done, it's historic data. It's no silver bullet for a sort of doing a priori illegal activity detection. How can you, based on just knowing that I called you and called you, that we are a terrorist cell? You can't do that. You need some additional thing. For instance, me, well, the last week I had a long dialogue with my collaborators at Cornell and UC San Diego. I also spoke with my Dublin colleague who jumped between South Korea and China visiting. We have a paper coming up. Some of those countries, should that trigger a sort of the system term that, oh, dog is in dialogue with someone in China and South Korea? Where is the border? How do they want to use this technology? I think this is along the line they will go. I recently had a student in South Africa. He was talking to someone in Europe. They stole his cellular while he was talking. So he called me up from a private phone down there. okay, suddenly that's a trigger maybe. I was talking with someone in a private phone, so maybe we should zoom in on dog and listening to dog. And then I had a number of PhD positions open where I had applicants from all over the world, including one in Pakistan and Bangladesh, and even one in Tehran. Oh yes, I'm a suspicious guy. I had a phone call. And the odd thing is that they only have the metadata, me talking with somebody in Tehran. Well, I didn't call up as an advisor from this university in Tehran. But come on, knowing that I was there, I must be very suspicious. This is actually what they think they can use the technology for. It's not useful. That is called a false alert. So my claim then, or the implication, is that of course you need more than this. You need the content data itself. Just having this down there is just a simple mechanism for more or less what we already have in existence. You need this one, you still need this for doing the intention with the law, I presume. Also, this principle, proof of innocence principle, you're flipping the coin, and I'm a bit surprised we didn't go more into that so far. Suddenly, everybody is being a sort of guilty. Well, maybe me and somebody who is tracked down with this system share the same interest in soccer. We have the same kids in the same soccer club. We have a lot of dialogues because I might be involved in that. So maybe there are 40 calls between me and this guy that they tracked down. Do I have to prove my innocence based on that? Well, as a technology guy, I'm a bit suspicious. You have to maybe elaborate on that more. But we're turning the principle upside down. In addition, it's a government suddenly spying on us instead of us spying or controlling the government, which is also a principle I find appealing, living outside the EU, inside the Arctic Circle. Also, all these confidential activities. Journalists here, we know that the law is sometimes used to sort of put a journalist in front of a jurid, where you have to mandate that they give out their sources. Well, it's easy. You know, we can tap in. Where is the borderline here? There is a lot of confidential activities going on, even in the EU, that is not really illegal, but might be a sort of violated by using this technology, and so on and so on. Maybe I'm not covering this area too well as a lawyer. I'm just a layman, but still, I'm concerned as a layman. Because who will have access to this information? Yes, it starts with 5 years in blah, 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 the level of crime that potentially that can be violated. What if they suspect some of you or me to have a sort of violated that and discover, okay, but he did a thing that only has 2 year sort of limit. What can they use that for? Currently, we know that that hasn't been discussed. But they discovered something. It's not that that bad, but it's quite bad. So let's track him down and use his information. What about tax authorities? All these kind of activities. Where is the border here? The thin red line. Google has already attacked it. I took this one from BBC News in May 2007, where they said that, well, we are a sort of moderating over how long we store the data. And what we're doing is we're trying to match the data retention directive. So they're actually using this already to claim that, oh yeah, you can store it, so why can't we store it? That is Google, a statement from one of their employees. And of course, there's a lot of ways to circumvent this. We can skip some of these issues, but just public phones, internet chat, open wireless networks. We have technology, like peer-to-peer technology, where you can hide that the two of us are talking, but I go through a series of steps here, and we encrypt, and we hide the IP address, and we can, it goes more slowly, but still, it's hidden for everybody. It's called onion routing, or Tor, the onion router. It's very easy to do that. Network address translation. My wife is a dermatologist. And she is studying certain issues in her profession. I got spam in my email through my email on skin cancer products for the skin and all kind of issues. And I noticed that once she has sort of started to use the home computers more aggressively, I started to get spam from that area. I get spam from all kind of different teenager stuff because we go through the same internet address outside. So how can they determine that? So that is a problem. Scale, we're talking of billions of users. And we're also talking about email spam volume. 95% at least of the incoming mails, I have in the order of 290 to 300 a day. most of them are spam. And spam is coming from an illegal source. Hence, according to the law, I guess I'm in dialogue with somebody that is illegal, some activity that's illegal. I'm the recipient of some spam activity. But it's volume, and just to give the number, by the way, Ecotel Norway has figured out the number to be in the order of 250 million Norwegian kroner the first year to establish this on a six-month period. In Denmark, it was in the same order. And it will cost in the approximately 50 mil a year just to run this. And that's 1% of the revenue for the telcos. And for the small player up in Alta doing what we call broadband to maybe the local community, can he afford this one? Overall, it's 1%, so for Telenor, maybe okay. But maybe not for this small player. And then they have rural areas and all that. This adds to the problem. Digital divide. False positives I've covered. So, security, I don't trust. I don't trust many, too many. I trust all the people when I can see them. But having been in the computer industry for 20 years, I have a principle called the minimal trust base. And this is what we teach our students. Keep the trusted computing base as small as possible. Meaning that the fewer you put trust in, the better. That is a good engineered security system in computer science. Suddenly, I should trust a telco in Finland, in Tromsø, in Oslo, in Slovenia. I gave a talk there just recently, in Germany, all over. I should trust them. And with people, come on, what have... It's like you saw what happened with even the Nordea employee recently gave up the bank accounts of all the transactions of some of the royalties here in Norway to sell her. There are people out there I don't trust. Maybe I trust most of the companies, but I trust don't trust all the people. There are many employees. There are also that where they don't really have the intent. A USB stick, or the disk you mentioned in England, a USB stick today, it's so easy just to take and hoard all the data and you leave the building and you have with you the most vital data. There was a fantastic paper in communication of the ACM in August last year looking into privacy enhanced personalization, where they also looked into some of this technology. And I can come back to that afterwards in the discussion. But the point raised in that paper was that the most vital data you want to protect is those you are in dialogue with, those you are in contact with. And that is also what they have problem in sort of hoarding and getting a sort of hook into, except for those using Facebook and all those where you give your life out. Anyway, talk more, just to give a very concrete example. This is a Telenor-owned subsidiary here in Norway, and they got a fine 150,000 kroner recently because they sort of lost more than 100,000 of the customer records last year. Not because they lost it, but basically because they didn't tell Datatilsynet actually that they lost it. That's why they got this fine. So, in conclusion, we need to balance law enforcement and commercial needs. We need to do that. We have a sort of a lost case. We've lost privacy. We're losing every day. We're standing there in the middle of the avalanche is coming. We, at least in principle, we think we can stop it. And yes, some of us are trying to tell, oh yes, I'm stopping, but come on, it's just a small effort. We can't win this battle. But at least we can pretend and raise the consciousness of people so that you don't at least explicitly give away your information, or that you are more concerned or trained that maybe you should split your activity on the internet, using maybe Google a little bit, and then Yahoo, and then some of the Microsoft stuff, so you spread out thin. But in any case, you're on a losing slope. I'm a bit negative now. There are technical problems with this technology, at least if politicians really want to do to avoid something to happen in the future. So I just see this as a step one. We remember the first video camera I put out there was a lot of fuss. Nobody cares today. I did it one of the first on the internet ever back in 93, and even the main newspaper in the Netherlands interviewed also then. Today, nobody cares. All the kids, everybody is using this type of technology. The same with this. So what will be next step? Oh yeah, let's put into some data mining. Let's correlate with data. Let's correlate with all those that has been prosecuted earlier and so on. I don't have to be a sci-fi writer to a sort of conjecture this. So I have a principal concern. That's why I raise my voice. it's a weak voice, but I'm raising it in any case because I have this saying that I want to look myself into the mirror when I grow old. I know I did it. So I'm also concerned about this principle of that you should be innocent until proven guilty. And suddenly we have technology that is a sort of blurring this principle. Thank you.